Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab. Today, our topic is limits.
Yep. How far can you take your body? We've done that.
We've exhausted that.
I think so. So let's go uptown
to
the limits of the brain. To tackle just a piece of that question, let's just take a look at memory.
Okay. All right.
Great.
And we're going to do that by telling a story.
A story that we heard from Joan Allaire, you know, frequent guest on the show, author of the books Proust Was a Neuroscientist, How We Decide.
And the story begins in a small town in the old Soviet Union back in the 1920s.
And it's about a newspaper reporter named Mr. S. At least that's what we're going to call him.
Yeah, so Mr. S. is a newspaper reporter. And one day, his boss starts yelling at him because his boss gives out these assignments. Talks to the whole newsroom, and he notices that Mr. S. never takes notes. And this drives his boss crazy, because his boss is, you know, saying all these things they have to report on, and Mr. S. just never writes them down. And so his boss calls him to his office and says, "Are you lazy? Do you not take this job seriously?" And Mr. S. responds, "Well, I just remember it all."
And the editor says, "Come on," and he sort of quizzes him. He says, "What did I assign you yesterday?"
His boss gives him this quiz, and sure enough, he remembers everything.
He remembers everything the editor said, word for word. And the editor's thinking, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. I mean, he's not a great reporter, but he has something queer going on in his head. So he decides to send him to a famous medical doctor in Moscow, A.R. Luria. Who is Luria?
Luria is a classical figure in neuropsychology and in psychology in general.
And who is this?
Tell us your name.
Elhadad Goldberg. I'm a clinical professor at NYU Medical School.
Goldberg knew Luria.
Luria was my mentor. I worked very closely with him.
Not only was he a student of Luria,
yes.
Luria gave him a present once.
Ah, this is this book. The book about the original book about Mr. S.
This book is one of the great works of early neuroscience.
Wow. Given me by Luria, that's him, yeah.
Oh, so we're going to the right guy. You have an autographed copy by the guy.
It is a beautiful and almost novelistic description of what happened to Mr. S.
And the original title was A Little Book About Big Memory.
Yeah, what is it in Russian?
Маленькая книжка о большой памяти.
Okay, so Jonah, this guy, Mr. S, goes to this psychologist, Luria. Now, what does Luria do with him?
Luria, during the book, talks about how he wrote random numbers on a blackboard.
Numbers like 1, 8, 6, 4, 3, about 50 numbers.
And asks Mr. S to remember them.
Okay, here we are on page 16. S would study the material on the board.
For about 3 minutes.
Close his eyes, open them again for a moment.
Okay, done.
And with that, he would reel off the series. Precisely 6 6 8 0 4 3 2 1 8 7 8 7 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8 4 8
Victoria gives him, you know, this incredible assortment of memory tasks, you know, everything from memorize Dante's Inferno to
memorize Dante's Inferno, the whole thing?
No.
Well, not the whole thing, just opening stanzas.
Nel mezzo del cammin di nostra vita mi ritrovai per una selva oscura.
But you know, here's the really weird thing. Mr. S does not read Italian, speak Italian. He had no idea what he was talking about.
La diritta via era smarrita.
And yet the thing he memorizes, he gets word perfect.
Yeah.
And not only that, he was tested 15 years after he'd memorized those stanzas, and he still got it right.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He remembered everything. He had
time. When you say everything, what do you mean by
that? I mean everything, okay? So if he, suppose he interviewed you 10 years ago, he would have remembered the color of your sweater, whether you held the mic in the left hand or in the right hand, he would have remembered everything.
Everything.
I mean everything.
Luria never talks about a computational limit on Mr. S's memory.
As an experimenter, I soon found myself in a state verging on utter confusion. And I simply had to admit that the capacity of his memory had no distinct limits.
How can there be no limits? Because I'm thinking about the size of a normal head. It's like 50 centimeters or something in diameter. The brain is 3 pounds. It's a very confined little situation. How could there be no limits?
I wish there was a good answer. Nobody has any idea why it is he had this infinite capability for recall. What it does suggest, though, is that the brain has the capability to store an incredible amount of stuff.
How much stuff, though? How much can you jam into a human brain?
I don't think anyone knows. I mean, so let's just stop. Let's call it quits. Go to the next. No. Forget that. In fact, let me take you to a competition which investigates that very question. We're going to change locations from, where were we just now? Russia?
We were in Russia.
From Russia, 1920s, to, you ready for this? London, 2009. Here we are at the World Memory Championships.
The World what?
The World Memory Championships. Just go with me for a second.
Okay.
So we're in a hotel in central London. The lobby is crowded with the world's best memorizers.
So what was your name?
We got people here from like Oman.
Kranti Raj. I'm Dr. Kranti.
Manchester.
Hello, I'm Emil Hock.
Netherlands.
Yeah, Rick DeYoung.
You even have a team of Chinese girls in the corner doing a cheer.
And what are we doing here?
Well, the people here are a little bit like the guy you were describing, Mr. S. They are walking experiments in brain stuffing. The difference is, they're perfectly normal human beings.
Could you start by introducing yourself?
Okay.
Like, take this guy.
I'm Ben Pridmore. I'm the reigning world memory champion. I'm 33 years old and I live in Nottingham.
Ben can take a string of numbers that is 1,400 numbers long.
Random numbers.
Random numbers. And he can commit it to memory instantly. He can take a deck of cards and memorize it in 24 seconds.
Wow.
Getting better.
Yeah.
We've not actually reached, you know, any kind of upper limit of what it's possible to memorize yet. Everybody's still consistently improving.
So here's what we did. We found a guy.
Oh, my name's Ronnie White, and I'm the 2009 USA Memory Champion.
He's a Navy reservist from Dallas, Texas.
As a matter of fact, I had to get permission from my unit to come here.
And we followed him around the competition.
What's about to happen?
Well, the competition's about to start. You know, it's day one. It should be a fun day.
Because we wanted to know, like, how do you do it? How do you take the limits of a normal brain and completely shatter them?
So I walked in the room that day wearing my Michael Phelps t-shirt. You know, it said USA on the front.
Okay, your 1 minute of mental preparation time starts now.
The final minutes before you start an event, you're sitting in your chair and you're just collecting your thoughts. I put on my military glasses. I got some, they look like Drew Carey's glasses. And I put those on to remind me, hey, remain calm. You know, I wore those all throughout my tour in Afghanistan. And if you're going down a road and you're needing to be on the lookout for IEDs, but you're not calm, you're nervous and jittery, you could die. Then I'll put on some noise-canceling headsets. Then I just close my eyes, sit in my chair.
10 seconds. Neurons on the ready.
Neurons on the ready, they say. Go! And at that moment, 60 people turn over papers. On these pieces of paper are numbers.
6, 7, 1.
Nothing but numbers. Numbers, 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 forever.
And like, what are they doing now?
Well, they have to memorize them.
So they're just seeing all these people staring at pieces of paper?
Yeah, absolute silence. Heads down, 60 heads down, staring at numbers.
6, 7.
But here's the interesting thing. Uh-huh. In their heads,
three,
they're not seeing
three,
numbers.
Four.
Instead, those numbers
nine,
are turning into
eight.
George Bush.
Four.
Florence
two,
Nightingale.
One.
Randy
two,
Richardson, he's a friend.
One.
Barney Fife.
Six.
Rash.
Eight.
Michael Jordan.
Two.
Chuck Norris.
Six,
Donnie Brasco.
Two.
Bush. Oh, no, that was
one,
Boy George.
Three,
Joe T.
Five.
Martha Stewart.
Six,
George Michael.
Seven,
Ben Franklin.
One,
Chuck Norris.
Three,
Anne Frank.
Three,
Indiana Jones.
Five.
My friend Ronnie.
Four,
King Tut.
Six,
I have a person assigned to every number from 0 to 99.
Six, eight.
And then I have a verb assigned to every person from 0 to 99. And then I have a noun assigned to every digit. So you're just taking person, verbs, and objects.
Stop memorization. Please put the cards down.
And you're putting them all together, and they really don't make sense.
What were some of the things that were? Give me an example.
The images I saw?
Yeah.
I saw Albert Einstein riding a roller coaster into a bunch of fog.
5, 9, 3, 7, 8, 7.
That was one of the images. I saw a Fat Albert cartoon character driving a car.
8, 1, 9, 9.
I saw Victoria's Secret model which was one of my favorite pictures. I saw a Victoria's Secret model shooting a gun.
Hey, Ronnie.
Stuff like that.
So there seems stuff to like be that. Something about turning data into pictures that makes that data etch.
It becomes easier to hold on to.
Do you have any idea why?
Do I have any idea why?
No. I'm asking.
But Jonah might.
I don't know. I would just be purely speculating here. But the visual cortex has been hugely enhanced in human evolution. It's the rear half of our brain. Because we know that memories, there is no memory center of the brain. It's distributed in our sensory areas. It might make a little sense that given that we've got this huge chunk of visual cortex, that it's easier to store memory there.
Okay, so let me ask you, how did Ron's visual cortex do in the big contest?
Well, Ron didn't actually do so well.
He didn't?
Mm-mm. He was trying to memorize these 12 decks of cards, and he had constructed this whole, stack of pictures, but he did them in the wrong order, and he screwed it up.
He lost?
He lost really badly, unfortunately.
I was shocked. I mean, I was just shocked. That knocked me out of any possible...
You know who, by the way, who didn't lose? Remember Mr. S, the guy we started this conversation with?
Yeah, sure.
This is interesting. It turns out that Mr. S also had little pictures and little characters running around in his mind. But unlike Ron, he never asked for the pictures.
No, he couldn't. Even when he wanted not to do it, he couldn't help but do it.
Meaning what?
He was born that way. He had this tremendous memory without any effort and without any mnemonic techniques. This is the point.
Do you mean his mind made the pictures automatically?
Yeah.
Mr. S had a condition called synesthesia, where your senses get kind of tangled up.
So he heard voices in terms of colors.
Right. Colors of voices.
Textures.
Smells of words.
And his numbers weren't just numbers. Sometimes he imagines walking through a crowded Moscow street and the numbers are scattered along the way. And so he describes how I'm walking down the street, there's the number one.
This is a proud, well-built man.
Then I make a right turn onto the side street, there's the number
two. Is a high-spirited woman.
Then I make a left turn, there's the number
three, a gloomy person. Why? I don't know.
Nobody knows. Nobody knows exactly what accounts for the individual associations of synesthesia. They just exist. But they're this extra scaffold for Mr. S's memory to cling to.
Wow, so he's like Ron, except he's using all his senses to remember numbers.
Exactly.
So, getting back to the plot, what did he do with this talent?
He became a traveling circus freak, basically.
Mr. Memory.
Professional mnemonist, yeah.
He gave up journalism to perform for crowds.
Like, just imagine it went something, I don't know, like this.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the captain of cognition, the master of memory, the spectacular Shereshevsky.
Imagine this is a big crowd. He walks onto the stage. He gives them an invitation. He asks them to
shout random numbers.
58.
25.
24.
157.
545.
52.
203.
And then after a little while, the crowd quiets down. And Mr. S would close his eyes and step forward.
And he would remember them all.
This was his job?
Yeah.
And it wasn't just numbers, by the way. He was thrown weird phrases, nonsense sounds, nouns, verbs, and sometimes he'd do four shows a day. And the more he did, the more obvious it became that this business of his, it had a downside. Here's where we're going to finally reach maybe the limits question that we're really examining in this program. He would hear all these nonsense phrases being thrown at him, and they would build up in his mind.
And it's important to note this was incredibly frustrating for Mr. S.
He had a constant stream of memories pouring into his brain. He couldn't get any of it out. And on top of that, as they piled up, the memories began to kind of mush together. One would trigger another, and then another, and then another.
It was this suffocating web of association.
The moment he encountered anything, everything even remotely related in his past to that something was immediately evoked in his memory.
For example, let's suppose a man in the audience stands up and he shouts out the word dog. For a split second, Mr. S sees a dog, which suggests another dog, and then another dog, and then
every dog he ever saw.
And the man suggests not just that man, but the man beside him and other men and men that he knew. And
all the other competitions where a similar looking man stood up and shouted something similar.
He was barrage, he was deluged, with all kinds of memories, totally unrelated. Everything layered, one layered on top of the other.
Well, that's horrible.
I agree.
Oh,
that would be a bloody nightmare.
The mind isn't just interested in storing information. It really wants to be able to get meaning out of that information, out of those memories. And that actually seems to be turned off, to be inhibited by remembering too much.
In other words, there really is a limit in our heads. It's a different kind of limit, really. Not the limitless ability to remember one number after another, but a precious balance in your head. If you remember too much, you will make no sense of the world.
It's weird. I've never actually thought of making sense of the world as being an act of negation.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It's very much that.
But it kind of makes sense, because if you think about, like, living here in New York City, all the people you bump into, if you remembered every freaking one, like, you wouldn't be able to have a relationship with your wife or your husband or your child, because they'd just be lost in this thick crowd in your head. Just like, get them out.
Somehow that's the balance. The act of forgetting is crucial to create preciousness.
Although I do wish I had a better memory.
What's your name again?
Well, this is Ron White, the memory guy. I'm going to pause for a few seconds and then I will start.
Hi, it's Patrick Autissier. Support for NPR comes from NPR station.
The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation.
Helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse.
NP Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide. On the web at fordfound.org.